Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Jeff Kegaris with Cool Springs and Donaldson Eye Care. We've proudly served the Middle Tennessee community for the last 26 years, and I want you to know we really appreciate you. Having an annual comprehensive eye health and vision exam is so important to the health of your eyes. From signs of diabetes, glaucoma, and cataracts, we're looking for it all. Don't let another day go by. Schedule your annual eye health and vision exam at Cool Springs or Donaldson Eye Care.
From the in-office studios of his eye care practices in Nashville, Tennessee, it's As I See It with Dr. Jeff Kegaris, your source for eye care education and receiving the type of patient relationship you deserve. It is time for a patient revolution. And now, your host, Dr. Jeff Kegaris.
Welcome to As I See It. I'm your host, Dr. Jeff Kegaris, coming to you from Cool Springs Eye Care in Nashville, Tennessee. Representing both of our offices, Cool Springs and Donaldson, it's time to get your eyes checked. Whether you see us or somebody else, please make sure to take you and your family in for a primary eye health and vision examination. Today, that includes children. Nearsightedness. I can see up close, at near, but not far away. Over 40% of the United States population is nearsighted, and in 20 years, it's estimated that more than one half of the world's population will be nearsightedness. That is not normal. Nearsightedness is not just a normal condition. It is an abnormal condition. It actually is a disease and one of the top 10 presenting diseases in the world, and it's now able to be slowed down. We can't completely fix it. We can correct the symptoms, but we do have a problem with the length of the eye. And I'm very, very happy to be joined by one of our myopia, that's nearsightedness, control experts, Dr. Amy Jacobs, and she's going to share her insights on common questions that patients ask and touch on some new myopia control options. The symptoms are nearsightedness. The treatments are for the symptoms, glasses, contacts, even laser vision, laser surgery. But those don't correct the disease. The disease is continual growth and elongation of the eye, what we call axial length or size. Amy, let's talk more about it, and welcome to As I See It.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So let's review. My child's eye gets longer. Why is that a problem?
So higher levels of nearsightedness or myopia correlate with a longer eye, and a longer eye or an elongated eye correlates with a greater risk of eye disease in the future for these kids. So those that have high myopia, or we're talking about like greater than a minus 5 or a minus 6 typically, are 40 times more likely to develop myopic maculopathy.
Wait a minute. You said 40, not 4, right?
40.
40.
40 times.
Wow.
Yes. And that just, it gets, the risk gets higher as the nearsightedness grows up. So that, or as the nearsightedness increases.
Sure.
So that's more for like the minus 4, minus 6, or minus 5, minus 6 range. But they're also 20% or 20 times more likely to develop a retinal detachment, 5 times more likely to develop a cataract earlier in life, and 3 times more likely to develop glaucoma. So even if the myopia or the nearsightedness cannot totally be prevented or reversed, decreasing the endpoint will reduce the risk of ocular disease throughout their life.
Yeah, so we're not talking about, hey, this, you've got a 40 times risk of this happening in the next 2 years.
Right.
We're talking about their lifetime risk, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
So at the very time that some of these people may be in the middle of their career, making money for their family, you know, those are the times when a retinal detachment could be devastating.
Exactly.
And so we have the opportunity to, if I could say to people, hey, I can reduce your risk of having a retinal detachment. Mm-hmm. There aren't very many people that would say, ah, no, don't worry
right.
about that.
I think everybody's interested in that.
Exactly. And so that's effectively one of the things we're saying when we mm-hmm. say, hey, I can slow down your nearsightedness.
Right.
Right?
Yep. We're actually saying we can make your eyes healthier for longer.
Absolutely. So, but you know, I mean, what's the big deal? Can't you just correct it with glasses or contacts or, again, laser surgery mm-hmm. like we talked about? Isn't that correcting it?
So like you were saying, that's correcting the symptom. So the symptom is you can't see. You can't see far away. We can correct that. We can visually correct you with glasses or contacts or laser surgery like LASIK, but that doesn't treat the myopic progression or the eye getting longer over time. It just treats the visual portion of it. So the goal is to lessen the eye elongation over time, and regular glasses, contact lenses, LASIK surgery does not do that.
So even with LASIK surgery, I mean, I feel like, you know, let's say I looked at my contact lens or my glasses prescription. Maybe you, many of you out there are going, well, I've got a 4 in front of that or a 6, right? Usually with a minus sign, because the minus means that's what we're using to correct nearsightedness. But now my prescription after laser vision is 0.
Right.
Hasn't that fixed it?
So again, that's fixed the symptom. So let's say we have a patient who's a minus 6 and they have an axial length of, let's just say, 27 millimeters. After they get LASIK, it manipulates the cornea so they no longer have that minus 6 prescription, but it doesn't change the length of the eye. They will always have that 27 millimeter elongated eye. It just treats the visual portion of it.
Gotcha. Difference between the symptom versus the disease, right? Okay, so why wasn't this available when I was growing up and I was becoming nearsighted, or you were even growing up and you were becoming nearsighted?
Yep. So the kind of the studies that they've been doing on this have been kind of in the works for the last couple decades. So it's been, myopia control has been growing in popularity for the last 2 decades. In 2002, there were only about 10 peer-reviewed studies that were available. And you fast forward to 2022 and there's over 200. So science and research leads to more clinical application, and we just didn't have the knowledge and the research back then that we do now. We know more.
And these longitudinal studies take a long time. It's not like we're going to study this for a year, like many of our glaucoma studies or other eye disease studies are. What is the benefit within 1 year, 2 years, 5 years?
Right.
We're talking about lifetimes, right? If you're going to be at increased risk for the macula to degenerate early, which is myopic macular degeneration. Yep. That's not the age-related one. That is due to being highly nearsighted, but the same type symptoms that people get when they have age-related macular degeneration. Right. You don't find that out by just doing a study for 5 or 7 years. Mm-hmm. You've got to follow them through the lifetime. So that's part of the reason, as well as a lot of studies have been done overseas first. And we're a little ethnocentric, aren't we? We're like, well, we'll believe it if we study that in the United States.
Right.
But we're finding an awful lot, if not complete, parallels to what they're maybe finding in the Far East, which were some of the earlier studies, right? Why maybe the Far East? Why were there maybe more studies earlier over there?
The myopia pandemic seems to have started there a little sooner. There is a shift that you'll see, or just a difference in ethnicity that you see between different races. So you have a lot more nearsighted children in Asia and in the Asian countries than you do in the United States. And again, we're starting to see that shift a little bit, but it affected them more greatly than it affected United States citizens for the most part.
Which caused their researchers, their doctors to say, hey, why is this happening, right? When we see some Far Eastern countries where 80 to 90% of the children are nearsighted, or 90% of the population, you go, why us, right?
Right.
And starting to study that. And what factors can we do to influence this? And so a lot of things being tried. So what current treatments are available now for us here in the States?
Yep. So we have two contact lens options. One has several different names. We refer to it in our office as GVSS, which stands for the Gentle Vision Shaping System. Other places may refer to this as orthokeratology or CRT lenses.
I think in our performance vision therapy office, we call it the kid's lens.
Oh, I like it.
There you go.
It's very simple.
Yeah.
There's also soft contact lenses that can help. These are multifocal designed contact lenses. There's atropine eye drops, which is the only pharmaceutical option that there is. And then there are glasses options that aren't great right now, but might be better come the next year or so.
So tell me about the overnight contact lens wear. How does that work, and who might really be a good candidate for that?
Yeah, so the GVSS lenses, or the kids lens, or CRT or ortho-K, these are rigid, hard contact lenses that you wear overnight.
Wait a minute, hard sounds uncomfortable.
Yes.
Is it?
There's, I would say, maybe a little bit at first, but people do very well with it. Yeah. I think they take a little getting used to. It might feel like there's a little something, you know, a foreign object in your eye a bit for the first few nights, but After that, they tend to be very comfortable as long as they're fit appropriately.
Your braces don't feel really good the first few
days.
Exactly.
You got to get used to them. Yeah, okay. So while you sleep, the lenses temporarily reshape the front surface of the eye, which we call the cornea, and this corrects your vision. So it's almost kind of like the same idea as LASIK, only it's temporary. So whenever you wake up, you take the lenses out, and you can actually see clearly without glasses or contacts for the entire next day. But then you put those lenses back in at nighttime, and it's almost like a retainer that you wear every single night to hold your eye in that corrected position. And these give the benefit of, again, no glasses or contacts throughout the day, but it also slows down myopic progression by about 50%.
Wow. Yeah. So part because of the way they're working, you're going to become less nearsighted currently, like right now, right? It's correcting your vision for the day. But also because of the effect on the cornea, it's changing kind of the optics, isn't it? And we believe that that may have some effect on not stimulating the retina or the eye to continue to grow longer.
Right.
So again, it's taken a while for us to figure this out. Mm-hmm. People had early, even 15, 20 years ago, they said, I think my patients that use this are becoming less nearsighted than they were. And well, it's because you got this retainer. You take that off and they'll go just right back to where they should have been. Mm-hmm. But they didn't.
No, they stayed right where they were for the most part. So, yes, but what you're talking about is the peripheral light rays inside the eyes and where those focus at. So with your traditional single vision, glasses, contact lenses, the light rays come in and they focus on the retina. The central ones focus on the retina, but the peripheral light rays focus behind the retina. So the thought is that those are triggering the eye to want to grow in order to bring those light rays into focus. So both with the GVSS lenses and with the soft multifocal lenses that we'll talk about shortly, both of those work by refocusing those peripheral light rays in front of the retina instead of behind the retina. And they just do that in different ways.
So reducing the stimulus, the physiologic stimulus that says, hey, keep growing. Because we've known from a lot of studies very early on, Hubel and Weasel and all of this type of stuff, if you really want to get academic about it, that if you close an eye or if the eye is blurry, it tends to want to grow to meet light rays, right? And so this changes that and maybe somehow cuts off the cascade. Lots of theories on that, but that seems to be effective in many of the treatments now, which, you know, so with these overnight lenses, one of the categories, if you will, that really benefit from this are athletes, right? Because now you're correcting vision, and I'm doing that without having to be dependent upon glasses, contacts, anything during the day for my sport.
So you don't have to worry about your glasses falling off while you're playing or have, you know, if you get sports goggles and they fog up while you're playing or worrying about your contacts getting dislodged or falling out while you're playing. All of that just kind of goes away, and you can just see without anything for that whole day.
Okay, so can I still get LASIK eventually if I do those lenses?
Yeah, and you're probably actually a better candidate for it after doing those. So you will have to demold is what we call it, which is a week or so where your eyes kind of go back to the normal shape. But typically, because this is also a form of myopia control or treatment for myopia control, your vision should be more stable afterwards and the prescription should be lower. And typically, whenever you're more stable and your prescription's lower, it makes you a better candidate for LASIK.
Absolutely. And we know that the results are more predictable with laser with lower prescriptions. You know, 1 to 3, more predictable, higher percentage chance of 20/20 uncorrected than 4 to 6 units.
Right.
And that's higher than 6 to 10 units, et cetera. So keeping you lower earlier, it makes you an even better candidate for laser vision. So so that's kind of the overnight lenses, which are very popular. And again, a little adjustment, yes, but we're not talking pain. Ah, we're talking, I feel something in my eye, which is like, hey, well, go to sleep.
Yeah.
Right? It's just going to be in there all night.
We usually will formulate a drop that they will put in whenever they are kind of adapting to the lenses that will make things more comfortable for them. And then I also tell them, just put it in right before you plan on going to sleep. Because typically, you'll feel it when your eyes open. But whenever the eye is closed, you really don't feel it as much because you're not blinking. It's not moving around on the eye. You're just going to sleep. So
is it true that parents can use that as a keep your eyes closed and go to sleep type treatment?
Maybe. Right?
I don't want to open my eyes and get out of bed. I got to keep this contact in. Right? No. So those work very, very well. Long tried, tested. Now we move into, though, hey, we got a soft option. This one you do have to wear during the day. But
you do.
Tell me about these soft contact options. Yeah. How are they different? How are they the same?
Yeah,
how do
so
they work?
It's still just a soft contact lens. So you wear it just like any other soft contact lens. You put it in the morning, you take it out before you go to sleep at night. But the optics to this lens are different. It's a multifocal style lens, which we typically reserve for our presbyopic patients or patients who have a need for far correction and also something for reading. These would help them not need reading glasses, but it just has a different purpose for kids. So again, it works in the same way as the GVSS lenses, where it refocuses those peripheral light rays to in front of the retina instead of behind the retina. And but it works just like a regular contact lens. And I think that kids are very, very adaptable, and they typically do better with these than even some of the, you know, 40-plus-year-olds sure. that they're intended for.
Yeah, because they still can focus through
they
these.
Can. Mm-hmm.
So whereas if you have to use this and we're correcting your optics, mm-hmm. you require the optics of the contact lens to focus,
right.
that's different.
Right.
With them having a flexible system, mm-hmm. we very seldom get anybody complaining, even athletes, no. about those issues, right?
Right, yep.
Although we would consider maybe a athlete that plays sports at night, we might sometimes adjust and give them also
yeah.
one for, you know, mm-hmm. for their sport or athlete or
right.
athletics, right?
Yeah, if it is causing any distortion in the periphery, sometimes we can, you know, manipulate the prescription a little bit to help it with certain things that
sure.
they're doing.
Sure. So, I mean, we're trying to treat the whole person.
Right.
And so it's very, very important when you're discussing this with the patient and their parents that you understand what their activities are, what they will be, what's important to them, where are their passions,
right?
Right? Because
mm-hmm.
it's, you know, yes, we're
you
talking
do.
About reducing their risk, but we're talking about treating the person first, the mm-hmm. eye issue second.
Right. And that's why there's options for us mm-hmm. to talk about too. So
yeah.
I was talking to some of our students the other day about how do we select what's best for them. And I told them, you really have, everybody's different. You really have to talk to the parents and the patient, and you have to figure out what their hobbies are and what they do. If they are even interested in contacts, if they're ready for contacts yet. And you have to think about all those things in order to formulate a plan mm-hmm. that's best for them.
Yeah, it's if you are talking with a doctor somewhere in Nevada and they go, yeah, here's what we do. Everybody gets this treatment, then that person's not opening up their toolbox wide enough
mm-hmm.
because there really are a lot of different options there.
Is,
no, when
yeah.
you wear the soft multifocals or these contact lenses for kids options, the soft lens option,
mm-hmm.
how much reduction in growth do mm-hmm. you typically see there?
So those are pretty similar, and they're usually around 50-55%.
Okay, so if we thought you were going to grow from a 1 to a 5,
mm-hmm.
maybe you only go from 1 to a 3. So we're not
right.
stopping it necessarily,
mm-hmm.
although there are some studies showing some people where it actually has halted
yeah.
progression,
mm-hmm.
right? But that's not what we promise or expect. That's
right.
kind of the edge of the bell curve at this point
mm-hmm.
in time.
Yep, so
right?
I usually judge it based on what their progression rate was previously.
Mm-hmm.
So if whenever we first, you know, started the therapy, they were progressing at 2 diopters a year, 2 whole steps a year, and then we think, okay, this is supposed to reduce it by 50-55%. Well, we're hoping for 1 diopter or 1 step
right,
of change
right.
instead. So
okay.
I always make sure that they understand this typically doesn't stop it completely. We're still going to get a little change, but we're hoping that we get significantly less, and that will add up year after year.
Okay. Now, you also have some eye drop options,
mm-hmm,
right?
Yeah.
Which for many people are, oh, my child doesn't want eye drops.
Mm-hmm.
But we can overcome that because
yeah.
it's just getting used to it.
Mm-hmm.
Or others are like, that's exactly what I think
yeah.
would work best. Tell me about those.
Yeah. So the eye drop is called atropine. And again, it's the only pharmaceutical option that's currently available. But it's a very low concentration drop. It's typically somewhere between 0.01% and 0.05%. We have to use specific compounding pharmacies in order to make that specific drop
mm-hmm.
for these patients. But it's just a drop. You use it before bed each night, and it has been shown in studies to reduce the progression by about 60-65%. So,
mm-hmm. even a little more.
It is
effective.
The most effective of mm-hmm. the options, but it is concentration dependent too.
Okay.
So we're still a little unsure about the mechanism of action for atropine. We know how the contact lens options work. Atropine, I think there's some different theories on that, but we do know that it works because
mm-hmm.
there's several studies that show that it's effective.
And a lot of people studying an awful lot of things as
mm-hmm.
to, you know, is this effect on the pigment cells, on the molecular biology, on the chemistry, on the
right.
physics,
mm-hmm.
who knows?
But
we
it
know
works.
It works,
it
right?
It does work.
and there are very few side effects, right? Now,
right.
people are used
mm-hmm.
to, this is a drop that technically, in full strength concentration,
mm-hmm.
would keep your eye dilated and blurry up close for a while. And that was what was intimidating to us as doctors when we first heard about it, low those many years ago. Oh, I wouldn't put them on that. They couldn't see up close.
Right.
But we're talking about really subtle concentrations.
Really low concentrations, yes. So you really, I always will do a follow-up after we start this drop to make sure that we're not getting any side effects. And sometimes we will whenever we do the higher of the percentages. Mm-hmm. But it's still very rare that we have side effects. But those are really what we're looking for. We're looking for increased light sensitivity because they do have a larger pupil than normal. We're looking for just changes in their near vision. They can no longer focus on schoolwork. They're having trouble focusing on schoolwork. They're feeling like they can't see very well. We're looking for like excessive amounts of burning or stinging or redness or changes to the surface of the eye where the drop is interacting poorly with the corneal tissue. Those are the things we're looking for. But again, it's so very, very rare that we see that. And I think a lot of it has to do with when we dose it as well, because we have them take it at nighttime right before they go to sleep. They sleep for 8 hours. By the time they wake up in the morning, most of the time, if they were going to have those side effects, they're probably gone at this point.
Right. Yeah. So side effects gone, but still the effectiveness during the day, because that drop lasts for a good long time, doesn't it?
Yes.
So,
yep.
Do you ever combine any of those therapies? Mm-hmm. Can you ever use eye drops and a contact lens?
Yeah, we combine them quite often. I usually don't start off with combining therapies because most of the time we don't need to, but we do need to sometimes, and I think the combination of contacts with the drops a lot of times is exactly what we need. So whenever they're part of this program, we monitor things really closely, and I usually will see them back, depending on what we're doing, 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, just to make sure that we're getting the effect that we want. So if we put them in the GVSS lenses, let's say, and we're expecting to get 50% reduction, but we see that the prescription's still changing about the same amount as before, sometimes that happens, and then we say, what else do we need to do to try to slow this down more? This isn't doing what we want it to do. So let's keep you in this lens maybe and add atropine at nighttime. Or let's try a soft multifocal and add atropine. Or just some kind of combination of therapies. Sometimes just with the atropine alone, just adjusting the concentration can help. If we start them off with a lower concentration, it's not working, we can bump up to the higher. And as long as they're not having any side effects from that, we can keep them on that strength. So there's a lot of little things that we can adjust with the program based on what's not working.
This is where you need a very experienced specialist. And again, I'm talking with Dr. Amy Jacobs, who is our myopia control specialist at Cool Springs Eye Care and Performance Vision Therapy, where we provide myopia control treatment and therapy. Dr. Jacobs has a wealth of experience and a lot of tools in her toolbox to help minimize the chance of progression of myopia and thus keep the eyes healthier. Now, there's a glasses option that is now available in Canada, has been used in, again, the Far East, and it's going to be coming to the United States. What do we know about that?
So there's actually a few different ones. I'm not sure exactly which one you're referring to, but I know several of these have been used in other countries already.
Expert. I thought there was one. There are obviously more.
I think there's probably even more than I have listed here, but right now our glasses option is just not great. It is a regular lined bifocal. Actually, the most effective option is something called an executive bifocal, which has a line across the entire lens. It's not very aesthetically pleasing. A lot of times kids don't like it, parents don't like it. And then it just doesn't work as well as the other options either. So a lot of the studies that they have done on that have shown that it only reduces prescription by about 15%, whereas the other options, again, are up around between the 50-65% range. So it's not really something that we reach for a whole lot right now.
So less effective, even though for a while people were trying bifocals a lot. So about 5-15% effective in its reduction.
Right.
And 100% effective in reducing the chance of a prom date.
Exactly.
That wasn't in the script, was it? All right. But the new lenses
that are coming out. So there's one that's made by Essilor. It's called the Stellest lens, and it uses something called Holt technology, which, I'm not real sure what that stands for, but it consists of a constellation of aspherical lenslets spread on 11 rings and was designed to create, for the first time, a volume of signal that slows down the elongation of the eye.
Man, so you sound like the marketing department.
Yeah, they probably pulled it straight from them. Again, these aren't available to us yet, so I don't know a ton about them. I just know that they are in the works, and I'm keeping it in the back of my mind for a lot of patients. I had one little girl last week that she has just kind of a lot of sensory issues. She doesn't like drops at all, is actually really terrified of them, unable to put contacts in at this point. Just the options that we had for her just weren't great right now. So I was excited to be able to tell her mom that, you know, hopefully sometime this year we do have a glasses option that's actually going to be effective for her. So, you know, I have a little list going in my office where I write down names. So as soon as these are available, I know who I've talked to about them, so we can go ahead and get them scheduled back in to try these out. But yeah, so that's one. And it sounds like it works similar to the contact lens options, where it looks like it's working on the peripheral light rays again. It just is in glasses form instead of contact form.
Okay.
Yep, so that one is called the Stellest lens. And then there's also one from Hoya that's called the MyoSmart, and it uses DIMS technology, D-I-M-S, which stands for Defocus Incorporated Multiple Segments. And so again, sounds like the same premise. There is one that's a little different, though. It's called the DOT lens, and it's by SightGlass Vision, Inc. This uses light diffusion technology, and it has a clear central aperture that's surrounded by multiple dots that reduce the peripheral retinal contrast by at least one-third to half compared to central or on-axis contrast. So this one's working on contrast sensitivity versus peripheral light rays.
And we don't know yet whether that's going to be clear straight ahead and dim a little bit of peripheral vision and all of that. Yeah. Again, these are all theorized. They're coming out with some of their own studies, and we don't have any post-market data that's we certainly in the United States yet that we can.
So yeah, it's hard to say exactly what kind of effect we're going to see from these, how easy it's going to be for kids to adapt to these lenses. Are they going to feel blurry out of them? Are they going to be able to function okay in them? All of that is still up in the air.
Sure. But there are a few main lens companies in the world. I know we hear this name, Essilor, that's one, and Zeiss, people are familiar, Shamir, Hoya. And you can imagine if you went to the board of directors of those companies and said, hey, I'd like to create this product. And the board of directors said, well, is there a real need for this? Well, let's see. Half of the world's population is going to need this by 2050. Holy cow. Why haven't we been developing this sooner? So you can see why people that make lenses and glasses are jumping into this, as well as nearly every contact lens manufacturer, as well as utilizing pharmaceuticals in different concentrations. And just there's just a whole lot of energy going into this sphere in the world of eye care. And for good reason.
Yep, we're seeing more and more of it.
So if it's possible, can you reverse the axial length on a patient?
No. Unfortunately, you can't.
So once I'm at a point, I can't go backwards.
You really can't go back. And that's something that I make sure that I stress whenever we're doing our myopia control consults, because I think sometimes there is a little bit of confusion from parents on that. They think that we are getting rid of the problem, that we're reversing it, that we're correcting it. So I have to make sure they understand we're not getting rid of what they have right now. They are still going to be the -3 that they are right now. We're just keeping it from getting worse over time, and we're keeping the eye as short as possible to keep it as healthy as possible. But no, we can't reduce the amount of myopia that they already have. We can't shorten the eye, you know, from where it's already at. We're just keeping it from getting worse.
Are we seeing a point, though, where we have enough evidence that if mom and dad both were moderate to highly nearsighted and the child is ahead of the curve, looks like they're trending towards a longer eye than what is standard? And keep in mind, longer axial length or longer eyes are not a common, in fact, not at all a standard measurement in a comprehensive eye health and vision exam. It just hasn't been included. Now, it will be now at Performers Vision Therapy and Cool Springs Eye Care and in our Donaldson Eye Care practice eventually, because we're really looking at that in kids to say, where are you on this? No matter where your prescription is, how long is your eye? Is it possible, Amy, that you may see treating people when they're close to zero prescription so that they don't become nearsighted? You're stuck.
That's best case scenario is if we know where kids are supposed to be at certain ages. We know whenever you are 6 years old what your expected prescription is at that point. We know whenever you're 10 what your expected prescription is. So if we're seeing that maybe you're not nearsighted yet, but you're lower than where you're supposed to be at and for the farsighted scale, then Yeah, we can definitely start you on these treatments, especially if you have other risk factors, and we're always looking at those things. So if you have the family history, you have a parent or even two parents who are already nearsighted or high nearsighted, we're seeing that your prescription is not, you know, it's not quite where it's expected to be at for your age, and we're thinking that you are trending more towards the nearsighted spectrum. Mm-hmm. If you're under 8, 9 years old, where you have more time for that nearsightedness to accelerate. We're always looking at ethnicity. We're looking at how much time you spend on near devices. We're looking at how much time you spend outdoors. And then we're kind of linking all that information together to see how at risk are you for developing myopia sometime soon. And if you're, you know, if you have more than one of those risk factors, then we're talking about it. And hopefully we can help prevent you from becoming myopic in general.
And this is where, you know, again, good parenting is not just treating what's the issue now, but it's trying to make a better life for our kids and minimizing them having problems down the road, whether mm-hmm. we had them or not,
right.
is really what it's all about. Right. From an eye standpoint, mm-hmm. at least we have that technology now to be able to mm-hmm. really make a big, big impact. Mm-hmm. We've run into this phase of COVID, okay, over the last 3 years, and that forced remote learning for a lot of people. What effect does remote learning and being outside less have on mm-hmm. the myopia epidemic?
So those are two of the risk factors that we look at. So with the pandemic, obviously there's been more virtual learning, more online time, more screen time in general. Kids are just spending more time focused on things that are close to them. And in a lot of the studies, they're finding that if you spend more than 3 hours a day looking at things up close, your risk is higher for developing nearsightedness. So it's definitely, I don't think it's helped. I think it's mm-hmm. definitely hurt. And I think it's it's contributing to the pandemic, the myopic pandemic that's already occurring. Yeah.
So this is where, you know, I'm staying away from the political side of this, but if you only focus on COVID and say, okay, masks and vaccines, hey, that can minimize COVID, and then doing all these other things, you can't do that from a public health standpoint and not take into account, well, what are the other mental health ramifications? We've talked in our podcast before with Shara Carter about the mental health, deleterious ramifications. We're talking about, from an eye standpoint, it is more harmful to myopia to have all remote learning.